Scott Brown, welcome to All Things Considered.
Great. Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
We'll just start with the recent news about James Foley and what's been happening in Iraq with the Islamic State, also known as ISIS. Where do you see the American role in that conflict going forward?
Well, first of all, it's I'm sad and I'm angered. I just can't believe. Well, let me backtrack. I feel very badly, obviously, for him and his family, and for those who have been killed, those families whose lives have been torn apart as a result of the actions of ISIS. And that's why I'm more resolved now than I've ever been to make sure that these types of things don't happen again, number one. But more importantly, what is the goal of ISIS? People need to ask themselves, what's their goal? Their goal is to get a country, get the resources of that country, and then export terrorism around the region and the world. That's their goal. Our goal should be to work with our Arab League partners and our allies to make sure that they don't get their own country, because they wanted to put a flag in the White House. And by doing what they did as retaliation for our involvement in pushing them back, I think people understand that Islam is and religion actually plays a role in these radical Islamic terrorists. So I feel that we need to stay resolved. I have said publicly that the president is right to arm the Kurds to push back on ISIS, to disrupt and dismantle their command structure, and also move forward with trying to eliminate their supply lines and allow the Kurds and the Iraqi government and army to push back and reestablish and get some type of a semblance of order. I also commented that back in 2011, October, I wrote a letter, me and other senators, saying, please don't leave, Mr. President, as is. Don't leave those gains on the battlefield, because if we do, we're going to have a void. And that void has, in fact, happened. It's no surprise. So I'm hopeful that it doesn't happen again in Afghanistan, because we've had transition forces in place. We had it in Germany. We had it in Japan, Korea. We have done this before to allow these fledgling governments to actually move forward gingerly and actually establish their roles. And it's a problem. So I look forward to having the opportunity to get back on armed services and work on these types of issues and play, offer some type of guidance and assistance.
One of the concerns has been that in a situation like Iraq, that or in Afghanistan, for that matter, that the governments there may decide whether the U.S. wants to leave a residual force there or not. We don't necessarily want to have that force there. So can you then, in a situation like that, insist strongly or extremely strongly that you maintain a troop presence in a country that may not want that troop presence?
Well, of course not, but that wasn't the case in Iraq. The president said you couldn't execute a status of forces agreement, with, and all indications are that they should have stayed at the table and continued bargaining, as we've done in many, over 40 other instances. So to say that we couldn't have stayed and negotiated an agreement is just false. And we had and should have stayed there and had the opportunity to allow that fledgling government to actually reestablish itself. In Afghanistan, we're in a situation now. I do not want to leave all the lives and limbs on the battlefield, all those successes, and we should leave a transition force there. What's the number? It depends on the recommendation on the, with the generals on the ground, to rely on their expertise and guidance to know what the appropriate number is, and then allow them to transition into a properly transfer of power, a proper transfer of power. It's very simple, and that it's not simple. It's very common, I should say, and it's something I would support and have supported.
You've said one of the main reasons why you got into this U.S. Senate race was the Affordable Care Act and the effects thereof. You've proposed moving health care laws to the states, having state solutions like what's going on in Massachusetts. Do you then also support full flexibility for states to be able to craft a health care solution? And what I mean by that is, would you – so the federal health care law as it stands now, for example, bans insurance companies from denying people with pre-existing conditions from being able to seek coverage. Mm-hmm. Would there be any federal caveats to those state solutions that the federal government would be able to say, here's what we expect, or would it be completely state-based?
Let me just backtrack a minute. I'm running because I'm a patriot, and I'm deeply concerned about where our country and our state are heading. I'm also want to go down to Washington to be that independent voter and thinker, which I don't believe we have right now. We have a senator who's voting over 99% of the time with the president and his failed policies. Obamacare, she was the deciding vote on that. She's voted against every ability for us to keep our doctors, our hospitals, our treatment plans that we have come accustomed to. And I believe that's wrong. Yes, I believe that I'm almost a federalist in that respect. I believe states can do it better. And they can certainly cover pre-existing conditions, covering your kids to X age, whatever you want, the catastrophic care, covering those who need additional coverages. People want you to think, Washingtonians want you to think that Obamacare is the only answer. Well, with all due respect, other states have addressed these issues. They took into consideration all the things you just referenced and did it, quite frankly, cheaper, more effectively, and with competition. And the plan that I see happening, we need to repeal Obamacare, and we need to put in place something that works for us, allows us to address all the things that you and others are concerned about. There's no reason why we can't do it, and also respecting our rights and freedoms and also doing it more competitively. Because I look at the VA right now and look at Obamacare. Obamacare is the VA in a couple of years with the top-heavy bureaucratic nightmare. You ask any business right now, I challenge you guys to go out to businesses that I've visited and see how much more they're paying for getting lesser coverage, higher deductibles, longer lines. We only have one insurance carrier in our state. Apparently, more are coming after the election. Apparently, the VA is going to be fixed after the election. Everything's after the election, and these broken promises to our citizens is just wrong.
But under the plan, you're saying that a state could say, we're not going to get involved in pre-existing conditions, and insurance companies could conceivably.
Listen, I know what you're trying to say, but I have to respectfully disagree. It's something that's very important for our state and its citizens, and it's something that more than likely would be covered in any type of plan that we offered, because we need competition. We don't have any competition. All of those things that you're talking about, we can have good, smart people like you at the table and others at the table to determine what's important for us, and that is one thing that is important to me. I've already voted on something like that, and I would continue to support that, and I'm sure it's important for other people.
But I just want to clarify that you're saying that it would be up to the state. It would not necessarily.
Yeah, the federal
there would
government,
be no federal government.
Federal government can certainly incentivize in certain occasions. The plan that we develop obviously will have to be taken into account with everybody's thoughts and concerns. I believe we can do it better.
You've said that Washington needs to work together to create, among other things, strong business environment, and you described yourself as an independent voice that the Senate needs. And you've said that when you represented Massachusetts in the U.S. Senate, that you would often vote with Democrats, you would often vote with Republicans.
Well, the facts. I was the most bipartisan senator there. That's
but here
correct.
In a Republican primary, are you saying to voters who often are more conservative that you would again vote in that way?
Yeah, listen,
if you return to the U.S. Senate?
I'm an independent voter and thinker. I read the bills. I don't pass them before you know what's in them, like Nancy Pelosi did and like Senator Shaheen did with the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare bill. I read everything. I read them. I see how they affect our state, our country, our debt and our deficit, and I vote. Yeah, I'm an independent voter and thinker, and I'll give you an example. Right now, the Democrats are in charge in the Senate, and the president is the president. But during that time in the United States Senate, I was able to help pass the insider trading bill, which is an important piece of legislation that, since I have left, has been weakened. I also helped with the Hire a Hero Veterans Bill, allowing our veterans to be employed and our employers to actually get an incentive to actually keep them and hire them. The crowdfunding bill, the 3% withholding, the Arlington Cemetery bill. Listen, I'm a problem solver. I'm definitely a check and balance to the president and his policies, unlike Senator Shaheen, who's voting with him 99%+ of the time. You need independent problem solvers down there right now.
On the economy, and I mentioned about, you said Washington needs to work together to create a strong business environment. But what would be the first specific change that you would make to business laws or regulations to strengthen the business climate in New Hampshire and in the U.S.?
It's a perception of what's happening out there, and it's a reality, too, because if you look at what's happening after the election, the business mandate's coming in. So if you're a young man, which you are, and you want to start a business, which I hope you try to do sometime, you know, what are you looking at? You're looking at the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world. Then you're looking at a potential profit tax, if you can make money, in our state. Then the regulations, not only at the local, municipal, and then federal levels. And then you're looking at Obamacare and the tentacles of that, and how you're going to pay for health care for your employees. And if you don't pay, how much you're going to be fined. And then you look at the energy costs, which if you have natural gas, we're going to get hammered this winter, that we don't have the delivery system or the storage capacity. And then you throw in the unregulated, unaccountable bureaucrats circumventing Congress and imposing more and more regulations and challenges for businesses to start and grow and expand. Every single business that I have visited in our state has said the biggest challenge right now are Obamacare, what's happening after the election, energy costs, the regulations that are being changed on a weekly basis, and they're hiring. You know who they're hiring? They're hiring lawyers, and they're hiring regulators to understand the regulations. So we're hiring regulators to regulate and understand the regulations. That's not business to me.
And then what do you do first, though?
Listen, there's so much we can do. The first thing I would do is to create an environment and take that wet blanket off of businesses and business jobs and growth. One of the first thing I would look at is obviously repealing Obamacare and putting in a plan that works for us so people can plan for the 3 to 6 to 9 years, not 3 to 6 to 9 months, establishing an energy policy that actually makes sense so they can plan once again. But the problem is Washington itself is so broken right now where they don't talk, they don't work together. And the first thing out of their mouth every single time is we need more. We need more money. We need more regulations. We're creating more and more roadblocks for our job creators and people who have been hired by those job creators and ultimately may have an opportunity to create jobs themselves. And it's broken.
Now, you have called for more efforts to deal with border security between the U.S. and Mexico, and you've also said no amnesty. What do you do with the individuals who are already in the country?
Sure, that's a great question. Thanks for bringing it up. As you know, we have a problem. I look at it in different pillars. The first pillar is if we have kids who are here from out of country and they're going to school, they should get a diploma and the ability to stay here and work and live if they want. No brainer. If we have people who need seasonal help, whether because we have a service industry in our state, tourism, et cetera, and there's needs to be filled, we should allow that to happen. And it shouldn't be caught up in the bureaucratic nightmares that are happening right now for those employers. If you're looking at executives and other engineers, doctors, et cetera, and there's a need and we can't fill that need in order to keep our businesses vibrant and in our state, we should allow that to happen, no problem. But the first thing we have to do with regard to our national security and dealing with the immigration problems, we need to secure the border once and for all. It's not secured. Now, Senator Shaheen has voted twice not to send troops down to the border to offer in that security. She supports the DREAM Act. She supported those porous borders. And if you look at what we're doing right now, the president, through his executive order, is creating an additional class of people, expanding the definition of refugee, putting them ahead of the almost 4.6 million people that are following the laws, doing the right thing. And actually, there's a disincentive now to continue to follow that law. The president has sent out a message to the rest of that part of the world, hey, just get your kids here and they'll be fine. We'll take care of them. What I have said and what I believe needs to be done is we should make sure those kids are safe and secure. And then we need to get them back to their home country of origin. And then we need to work through the embassy process. And do we need to expand the embassy personnel? Great, let's do it. Do we need to have Secretary Kerry and the president call those other presidents and say, what do you need? Where's the breakdown? Why are these people coming here? What do you need? Having the nonprofits and the churches and other groups get involved in those countries, it needs to be a joint effort. But we have mechanisms in play right now that allow for the orderly processing of people who feel they're being persecuted or need refugee or political asylum. So what do you do with the 10 million? Let's say it's 10 million people that are here. Whatever we do, I don't believe that we should incentivize that behavior and the illegality by giving them EBT cards, preferential housing ahead of those 4.6 million people and sometimes ahead of our own citizens. Whatever plan we do to have them so-called come out of the shadows, during that time period, they can't be receiving benefits. So I look forward to being part of that solution, going down there and working on that issue and putting in place potentially, if that's the case, an opportunity for them to do that. But they can't be getting benefits during that time period.
But there could conceivably be a path to legalization of some sort under what you would potentially be willing to support that?
If there's a path, they can't be getting benefits towards that end, and they would go absolutely in the end of the line. It would have to be a pretty thorough and detailed path. And what that is, we have to get down there and start working on it.
You've described your energy policy as all of the above. Does all of the above potentially include hydro energy from Northern Pass?
Listen, let me just talk about my philosophy, then I'll talk about Northern Pass. Wind, solar, nuclear, hydro, geothermal, siting, permitting, making sure that we can establish a process where citizens play a role, and Northern Pass is a great example of that. On the one hand, people want that energy in the grid. We'll ultimately get about 10%, give or take, depending on what ultimately happens. You have Franklin who'll get some jobs, and there'll be jobs created. But also you have to take into consideration the environmental impact and the aesthetic beauty of that part of our state and the rights and needs and desires of the people who live there. So while that plan is going forward, it's clear to me I don't support that proposal as presently being proposed. And the only way that it's going to be resolved is for them to continue to work together, continue to meet with the citizens, make sure that their rights and thoughts are being respected. And, you know, they're going to have to drop the lines, bury the lines in some way, shape, or form. I don't know where they're going to head with it, but the process is still ongoing.
For you, that would be a required condition that
It's not up to me. It's obviously a state and local issue. If there's a federal component of it, I'm happy to play a role in that. But right now, it's clear that the only way it's going to move forward is to bury or drop the lines in some way, shape, or form.
You've said that you support a balanced budget amendment for the federal budget. The deficit is now somewhere around $492 billion. And you've said that tax increases are off the table for you. You won't support them. How do you get to a balanced budget as things stand now? What changes would you have to make?
Well, first of all, I wish I could get to these. These are great questions, first of all, and get to them and say, oh, this is how you do it. It didn't happen overnight. It's not going to be fixed overnight. Let's start with that. I think everybody knows that. And you're talking about the debt and the deficit. The debt is going to be upwards of $18 trillion pretty soon. The deficit, as you know, has been upwards of $1 trillion. They finally did a budget, and the budget was done, and it was off balance, supported by Senator Shaheen, and put it on the backs of our veterans, which I would not have supported. So here's the issue, and I think the first step, the most logical step, is as follows. When you're looking at a deficit, you need to do budgets. You need to do them every year. And if a budget comes to us and it's $1 trillion overbalanced, over budget, which it traditionally has been, then you need to have the leader, the majority leader, which I hope is in our favor, and because I understand this is what's going to happen. You need to go. So you're in charge of armed services, Lizzie's education, Homeland Security, agriculture. So you need to go out to those committee chairs and say, hey, listen, we're $1 trillion in deficit right now. We're doing a budget, by the way. And we're going to have it balanced. So you need to go through all of the committees that you're responsible for, do that top to bottom review of every committee, and you need to come up with X savings. You need to come up with $200 billion, $100 billion, et cetera. And at the end of the day, by the way, we're not leaving at 12 o'clock on Thursday to go home and see your family and friends. We're not coming back Monday at 6 to do a fake judge vote. We're going to actually work for a month, and at the end of that month, we're going to actually do a budget. You have to get them back to ordinary order, regular order, going through the committee process and prioritizing what our needs are. Because right now there's no prioritization. There's the process. I know it's boring and people are, snoring probably listening to it. But you need to get back to the ordinary order to allow the people and members to do their jobs and let the leadership know what their priorities are. And they're not doing that. So let's assume we do that. And we address, we'll say, hypothetically balancing our budget. So we've eliminated that continued, deficit affecting our debt. Well, what are you going to do then? Well, the first thing that they always say is we need more money. And the president, sir, you just need to pay a little bit more. And we need to close loopholes. Great. What are they? Because the accelerated appreciation, the R&D tax credit, the child care tax credit, the homeowner interest deduction, the investment tax credit, those are all loopholes. So what ones are they? I'm happy to discuss and be part of that process. As I have voted to eliminate the ethanol subsidy, that was a loophole. Happy to get rid of it because its time was done. So there are many things that we can do, those top-to-bottom reviews of every federal program, looking at the fraud, waste, and abuse, looking how we deal with contracting, doing all the things that everybody talks about, looking at entitlement reform, making sure that everybody's at the table to figure out what their priorities are, looking at all the loopholes, so-called, and making sure that we actually, fix the ones that are obsolete and maybe stimulate the ones that need and could use additional help. And then we look at, well, what about job creation? The one thing we're not talking about is actually getting our economy really churning out real good middle-class paying jobs, and they're not going to do that until this lack of regulatory and tax certainty is done. And then we need to look at repatriating all that offshore money, upwards of a $3 trillion non-governmental stimulation bill that could be there to actually get back into the system. There's so many things, and it's like a spider web. They're all connected. But to do nothing and continue to kick the can down the road, I'll give you an example. Simpson Bowles, that's something we could have discussed. A good starting point. The sequestration committee, the supposedly select committee, they didn't come up with $1 of savings. Shame on them. I called for another committee to be involved in that process, and Harry Reid did nothing on it. To think that we can't agree on a dollar and make everybody take a tough vote, deal with taxes, deal with entitlement reform, deal with all those things that everyone's pointing fingers on and make everybody take a tough vote, that's what they blew right there. So there's a lot of things they can do. I've offered and will offer and insist that I am on the committee that deals with our debt and deficit.
So there isn't a particular piece of spending
that
you see,
but there's so many. Listen, we... Senator Coburn has a book that's bigger than that console of all the changes and challenges we could do. Simpson Bowles highlighted a bunch of them. There's plenty of them out there. You know, some of them I agree on, some of them I don't. But to get them on the table and sit down and actually discuss them is the challenge right now.
As we talk with candidates, there's a question we always ask at the end.
Are we at the end? It's so much fun.
It goes by so fast.
I know, it's fun.
If you look forward 6 years into the future, assuming that you win the nomination and win the general election, what do you point Granite Staters to 6 years from now to say this is where Senator Scott Brown made a difference, this is where he had an impact on particular issues?
The same thing I've done in my entire public service efforts. It's to be that independent, problem-solving, honest, hardworking, accessible, accountable public servant who was always, his door was always open. I may not agree with him all the time, but at least he did what Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan used to do. They'd battle by day, but at night they'd grab a scotch and play some cards and figure it out and putting our country's interest first, as Americans first. I want to be known as that guy that was recognized to go down there as that independent voter and thinker and didn't owe anybody anything. And if I can accomplish that and move our country forward to address its very real concerns, reestablish our respect with our allies and fear with our foes and respect with our foes and our foreign policy, if we can deal with our immigration problem, establish an energy policy, deal with our debt and deficit, get rid of Obamacare and put in something that works for us as a state, then I'm a happy man.
Scott Brown, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. And if people want to learn more, they can go to scottbrown.com. Thank you.